cozy. Should we go for a walk?
I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening.
I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke.
My name is Adam Buxton,
I'm a man. I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
Hey, how you doing, podcats? Adam Buxton here. Welcome to episode number 100. And, well, it's more or less business as usual. Myself and Rosie are taking a walk on a sunny Friday evening out here in the countryside of Norfolk in the east of England. And it's turned into a very nice evening. It was a little muggy earlier on. I'm not going to lie to you. I know, it's worrying and shocking, but there it is. On the upside, though, it seems to be festival time for the insect community, who are thriving in this weather, and I would say pretty much rule the house at the moment. Everywhere I go, I'm walking through spiders' webs, just trying to pick them out from my hair and my beard the whole time. And as for the flies, whoa. If anyone needs flies, give us a shout. They're all in our kitchen. I think it's because we live near a stream, and also there's a lot of cows in the fields around us, and I feel as if we get more fly action in Castle Buckles when the cows are out. But maybe some of you will be saying, no, it's nothing to do with the cows. Don't try and bring the cows down, Buckles. It's you and your filthy kitchen that the flies love. Well, that's a bit harsh on me, my wife, and the rest of the kitchen cleaning team. But it might be true. But look, let's get to it, shall we? Episode number 100. As you well know, features a stupid and rambly conversation with writer and director Joe Cornish and journalist and documentarian Louis Theroux, both of whom I have known since we met at school, aged 13. We got together at Joe's house in South London earlier this year, 2019, and as this is a special anniversary episode, we talked about this podcast, as well as Louis' appearance on Desert Island Discs, School Days, the most recent remake of A Star is Born. Spoiler alert, key plot details are revealed in this conversation. So if that's going to upset you, leave it for another time. And towards the end, we listened back to a tape of the three of us, aged 18, doing David Bowie impressions, and that recording will give you an idea of how not very far we've come since then. Speaking of David, there is even a new Song Wars-style Bowie song from Joe created specially for the 100th episode. I didn't expect it. It was a lovely surprise that Joe unveiled at the end of our rambly convo. Back at the end for more bits and pieces, but right now, without further ado, here we go.
Okay, you ready?
I'm going to harmonize.
Happy birthday to you.
When are you going to harmonize? Do you want to tune up?
Yeah, I do. Start again.
Okay, this is the note I'm going to hit.
Just give me a note.
Happy. Wait, I've got some orange pith in my mouth.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Adam Buxton's podcast. Happy birthday to you.
Hey, that's like a barbershop trio.
Congratulations.
Thank you
Congrats,
so much.
Man.
What an amazing occasion.
What an amazing achievement. I've made it to 100. I've never done 100 of anything.
In how many years would that be? It's about 4 years?
4 years. Started in late 2015.
What's the best episode?
The best one, Joe wants to know.
Besties and
besties
worsties.
Besties and worsties. Obviously, I'm not going to say worsties. But besties, depends who you ask.
Are they like your children and you can't choose one over another?
Exactly right.
Also, but you have a favourite child.
That's true. No, well, as it is with children, definitely there could be an easiest child. So if someone asked you on a bad day which is your favourite, then you would say, well, that one, because they're always so easy. But of course, they all mean something very, very unique, and you would be completely lost without any of them. And that's how I feel about every episode of the podcast, except...
Some of them are boring.
And some are better than others.
Some of them are a bit boring.
Some of them are better than others.
Some of them
some
are
don't
really,
work.
Really good.
Some just don't work.
Sometimes you met someone who you worship, yeah. And it was a bit disappointing.
That's actually
And you
true,
were a bit
isn't it?
Uptight and nervous.
Okay, here's an example of one that I totally misread at the time and felt weird about. Johnny Marr. So I interviewed Johnny Marr, went to Manchester...
That's a
studio.
Good one. People like that one.
Exactly. But I came out of it feeling like I'd dropped the ball and I hadn't done a good job with him. I'm not a Smiths expert. You know, there are sort of mega Smiths fans there. And I felt anxious that I was letting them down and that I hadn't done a good job with Johnny and I'd asked the wrong questions and it was just going to be annoying.
Wrong.
So I couldn't even listen back to it immediately because it just... There was other ones that... were good to go, and I could put those out. And then weeks turned to months, then a year, and it was just sitting there. And then I went back to it, and I was like, oh, no, this is good. He was great. He answered all my questions, and he was a brilliant interview. So it went out, but then I had to, as I have done a few times, write an email and sort of apologize a little bit and say, look, I hope you didn't take this personally.
But isn't that funny, though, that you can't always judge how well something's gone right after you've done it? Why do you think? Well, I think if I've done something on TV and I have a sense of it whether it's worked or not. I think.
I mean, you know when great bits happen, and you know when terrible bits happen. But sometimes
it's middling.
Sometimes a conversation that can feel quite boring actually is fun to listen to. That's the nice thing about podcasts as well. Come on then, Cornballs. Which ones have you listened to?
Of yours?
Yeah, that you thought, no, I'm not having that.
That I didn't... I can't tell you the ones I didn't
no,
like. That would
can't.
Be rude
would
to
be
the
unfair
person.
To the person, exactly. Mm.
But, you know, I always know I'm going to get some good Buckley's action.
What about... Have you listened
to the beginning and the end, and then a little bit of the person, but then sometimes I tune out.
Right, okay.
But which the ones I've really liked, I really liked the Bob Mortimer one. We were talking about this the other day.
One. Any
ones... I like the tree... I like the wise old tree, and I like the dog, Rosie the
Rosie.
Dog.
You know, the dog is real.
Well, that's what you say, but we've got history with fictional dogs.
That's true.
And I've and never heard her talk. Yeah. Like, I've been in her company in real life, but she's never talked.
She's shy.
And you make assumptions about her voice, about what she sounds like. Do you know what I mean?
She's all over the place personality-wise.
She's not a very feminine voice, is it?
No.
For a woman dog.
No. No, that's true.
Rosie. Was that Sir Johnny Morris? Do you regard him as an inspiration? Or?
That's a good question.
Well, we both liked Animal Magic, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because that went out of vogue for a while, didn't it? Anthropomorphizing animals.
You Why? Because it's patronizing.
Yeah, I think it was patronizing, and I think some people thought it wasn't scientific, but those weren't the actual... How would you know that the animal was really thinking that?
Did anyone think that? Somebody
in
the Observer.
What, did they think that that was actual animal mind reading?
No, but was there really a controversy about animal magic being unrealistic?
I think it was viewed as...
No!
I think it was viewed as a little bit...
Who viewed it that way? You're saying it went out of vogue because people were worried about the science.
People felt that Johnny Morris was giving children the wrong idea about...
Well, there is... I know what you're getting at here.
I did like some of their food. I'm an elephant. I think people thought that it was getting in the way of actually seeing animals as what they are. If
because
you thought
then
they all spoke like Johnny Morris.
They'd be shocked by footage of, like, a lion murdering an antelope. Or an elephant fucking another elephant.
That was the thing.
Suddenly from behind.
He didn't really do lions, did he? He only did animals that you could get quite close to in the zoo.
Well, he was a zookeeper.
Yeah, and it would be. So it was a lot of, wasn't it a lot of penguins and
maybe
things like that?
Maybe that's why it fell out of vogue, because zoos themselves are now sort of problematic in some ways for people, some people. I don't know.
Maybe that's what it was.
Because you do, you know, attitudes to all sorts of things have changed and animals are included in there.
What?
Wasn't...
If what? The thing is, if you...
what? Hang on a second. What's changed?
It's offensive to rob any living creature of its agency by providing it with a voice. How's that?
That's offensive.
That's offensive.
What you just said is offensive.
Yeah.
Why is what he said offensive?
I don't know. I'm just being provocative. But it seems to be the thing to say these days.
You know, I do worry about it, though. Seriously, I worry because I worry about
How
everything.
How dare you?
I am very disappointed.
Do you think you can get out of any sticky social situation by saying, "How dare you?"
Only Turn one when right someone has on. Said, "I dare you," and then you're saying it back.
How dare, or just, how dare you?
Like this.
How dare you?
I dare like this. Listen, this is... Or very behind the scenes, but sometimes I, when Rosie's not feeling well, I do the voice of Rosie.
Fuck off.
How dare you.
Sometimes.
But and she's still there.
She's still there.
You do it very well because it's seamless.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell which is the real Rosie and which is you. You are a good impressionist.
You've heard my Bowie.
That's true.
What was the other impression I used to be able to do?
I used to sometimes do Roger Moore.
Can't do it anymore.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, but I can do Rosie.
I like it when you sum up the people you're interviewing.
At the beginning?
Yeah, well, you take a deep breath.
Uh-huh.
And then you have a very pithy little surmisation of
I write
the person.
It. Yeah.
Do you?
I write it. So I read.
I like it when your voice switches from... You just become information box.
That's right.
Yeah, I like that. It's authoritative.
I like it too.
You're
I'm
like
glad
the
you like
of a
it.
Ship. You're gripping the wheel in two manly hands.
That's right.
Little hairy knuckles.
I think like this is a bonus bit. I've written
buckles,
a little
knuckles.
Overview. Buckles, knuckles.
Buckles, knuckles down.
Yeah. But, you know, some people don't like it.
Well, there it is.
There's always people that don't like it. For the Bob Mortimer episode, I wrote a little encapsulation of Bob's work with Jim Moyer, Vic Reeves, and I thought it was a good little overview. But I got a tweet from a guy saying, enjoyed the podcast, but you totally wasted 7 minutes of my life with that intro.
I'm more concerned that you take the tweet from the guy to heart.
Right.
Is that all it takes?
Yep.
A tweet from a guy.
Tweet from a guy. Because you don't know. Don't you find this when you get anonymous criticism online? You invest that person with all your own best qualities. You assume that they are intelligent. You assume that... they are successful, handsome, beautiful, and interesting. And you think, ouch, it's like getting a bit of harsh criticism from someone you admire. Joe's thinking about it.
No, I'd say that's a flat no.
Yeah, I'm not going to go with that one.
No.
I think it's more that you go through life imagining that most people like what you do. And of course, a lot of people don't. And it's just reality coming home is quite painful. I don't imagine they're particularly clever
to the point. You don't know how old they are. You don't know whether they're educationally subnormal.
What kind of day they're having.
You don't know whether they're in some sort of institution. Mm-hmm. You don't know whether they're mad.
Mm. Do you not look at any of the feedback for your films?
Well, then you get critics. If you release a film, you get like more than 200 professional critics writing long assessments of your work. Probably more than any other art form, right?
I guess
in terms of like an industry built around the critical analysis of
more
something.
More than books, for
more
sure.
Books,
probably more than TV.
More than radio.
But it's part of the ecology of life that there's people out there who hate what you do. I'm doing a couple of programs at the moment. For various reasons, I'm pretty sure they will get, along with some good reviews, some bad reviews. And no one gets good reviews all the time for everything they do. It would be weird, wouldn't it?
Sure.
So you've got to just realize that's part of life.
Come on.
You can't set yourself up for sunny days every day. It's not going to happen.
It's like being at a party and you're the DJ and 90% of the people in the room are loving the music.
Yeah.
But then there's one guy in the corner with his arms folded, just making faces
at
you.
Is it Dizzy Rascal?
It is Dizzy Rascal.
Is it Johnny Morris?
In the corner.
It's Dizzy Rascal and Johnny Morris. Dizzy Rascal is a big fan of Johnny Morris. Dizzy Rascal loves anthropomorphizing animals. Johnny loves Dizzy. He loves grime.
Yeah.
Does Dizzy Rascal do grime?
He did. He was a grime pioneer.
He's a grime pioneer. He was, yeah.
So, yeah, that's who it is. But the thing is, the point is...
Yes.
Don't concentrate on them. Concentrate on everyone else who's having a good time. Don't change the record to suit them. You'll just alienate everyone else at the disco party.
Well, what I think is the best thing to do is just plow your own furrow as much as possible.
Mm.
And the problem that we always had, me and Joe, with a lot of stuff, is that it feels wrong to always do the same kind of thing. Like, the way to be successful generally is to find what the most amount of people like, and then you just do that all the time.
Mm.
So the ones, you know, I'm well aware that a lot of people really like the sort of funny, lighter podcasts, and they're not that fussed about the ones that are a bit more serious or with some writer they've never heard of or whatever. But I really like those ones.
Writers.
Because I like listening to those types of episodes of other people's podcasts, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
So I feel as if it's nice to include all those different things.
Johnny and Dizzy. What a weird, just weird that they turned up together at the disco.
Johnny died, didn't he? Johnny Morris.
It was the ghost of Johnny Morris.
Yeah.
Turning up with Dizzy Rascal.
Dizzy Rascal was doing the voice for the ghost of Johnny Morris.
Is that what it is? That makes sense now.
This is the kind of sickening chit-chat.
I'm offended.
That happens when three white, privileged...
Cis male
fuckboys get together.
Oh, what's a fuckboy? I want to be a fuckboy.
You are.
I'm indifferent about the other terminology, but I'm excited about the fuckboy thing.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Is it?
Oh, what is a fuckboy?
Cishet fuckboys.
That sound quite good, doesn't it?
That could be a band. Is it too late to form a band?
Who is... I tell you, your cousin got labelled a cishet fuckboy.
Whoa, my cousin Justin.
Justin Theroux, yeah.
For what?
Because wasn't he in the Zoolander sequel?
He wrote it.
Right.
Yeah.
And because there was a
character played by Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen the film, but it came in for some criticism.
Yeah.
Insensitive portrayal of a trans person, and I read a review that referred to many of the people involved with the production as cishet fuckboys.
Doesn't really tell us what a fuckboy is.
What do you think it is?
I think it's just a general derogatory term.
For a heterosexual man who reproduces.
Just a tit.
Who likes to...
Breeder.
Oh, right. The definition I have here is fuckboy, a weak or contemptible man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's fair enough.
Is that real melody?
Heaven's in my phone charger.
What?
I left it right there.
Woof.
Did you see it?
What?
Have you got it?
What?
Where's my charger gone?
Woof.
Where's my phone charger?
What?
The battery's about to die. It was on the table.
What?
Round and round in their heads go the chord progressions, the empty lyrics, and the impoverished fragments of tune. And boom goes the brain box at the start of every bar, at the start of every bar. Boom goes the brain box.
Trying to think of some introductions for you both. I mean, I know that we're already into the podcast now, but I was going to say, as if it was a boxing match, I was going to say, on my left, journalist, documentarian, author, Desert Island Disc castaway, the center of banter, Louis Theroux.
on my right,
director.
It's not a Christmas themed show, though, is it?
No. And I couldn't come up with one.
But you know you're good. The center of banter is good.
The decanter of banter.
Once a year you say something funny.
But it's in a
I'm
big
getting
sack.
Into the pugilist. I'm getting into the pugilistic
idiom. Roasting. Roast battle.
What you mean is I have a pile of Bon Mot produced all through the year and I carry them in a huge sack to deliver around the world in millions.
Come back from that. What's Joe's moniker going to be? I tried to think of... I thought of the Stephen Hawking of talking, but then I thought that's not right for a lot of reasons.
Means like talk to a machine, a computer machine, which isn't an accurate representative. So what's your intro for me?
Well, I didn't have one. I got stuck. I had the Santa of Banta for Louis, and then I got stuck. I was hoping you might help. You're creative.
The Easter Bunny of funny.
Hey.
That's a good one. That's a very good one.
Whoa.
What about my professional achievements, though?
Writer and director. Ugh. And I was going to say something to describe our work together.
Mm-hmm.
And
90s TV comedian, award-winning radio broadcaster.
Yeah.
Writer and film director.
Yeah.
That covers it. That's everything.
Easter Bunny of funny.
Easter Bunny of funny.
The Easter Bunny. All right, here we
Jerk. Go. Ornish.
On my left, journalist, documentarian, author, Desert Island Disc castaway, the Santa of Banta, Louis Theroux.
I'm an author as well.
On my right, author, writer, director, presenter, 90s comedian, satirical genius. Behemoth, genius. Yes, genius, handsome man, cishet fuckboy, the Easter Bunny for funny, Joe Cornballs Cornish.
Yes, thank you. Wow, that's amazing. Thank you.
All right, man. Now
deserved a little gentle pony noise.
The contemptuous pony. I've put the contemptuous pony in my book.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's a very useful noise.
It's going to work with the audio book, but people who...
How do you write it?
Well, I wrote, Joe then deployed his contemptuous pony noise.
Yeah.
And hoped that people would imagine it. But that's what it is. If you buy the book and you're wondering. So, Lou, one thing I've been trying to build is a Louis Theroux on Desert Island Discs sampler. Just see if it works.
My friend Joe Cornish, well, I've rapped among friends. My friend Joe Cornish.
That was the best bit.
That was the best bit.
That's a good noise.
That's one of your sighs.
What was that in response to?
Don't
a
know.
Very probing question. That was Laverne really touching a deep psychological chord.
That was me digging deep.
You did a lot of... There was a lot of breath on the Desert Island Discs interview.
So here's the thing about doing Desert Island Discs. The first thing is they asked me a year before, so I had a year to think about going on it. The other thing is, like probably everyone, I had in my mind kind of fantasized about what if you were asked and what would you choose as your records? And then when it happened, I kind of built it up. And I suppose I'd also always thought, oh, if I ever am asked, I'll only do it if I'm ready to do it in a spirit of bringing, kind of delivering the goods, opening up and talking about personal things. So I may even have gone overboard, because I think you could also go on it and not talk about personal stuff. But I think I thought that's the price of admission is a little bit of spilling your guts. So when I went on it, I just had this feeling of, I felt very... almost divided. I had this feeling about, I'm really excited to do this. It's great. It's a very flattering thing to be asked to do. And I'm going to talk about personal stuff, which I'm not that excited about doing, but I have to do it. So it was almost like seeing these questions come in, quite difficult questions. One of the questions I think was, what in your life making documentaries has changed you? And it's that feeling of like, oh, I'm going to have to actually dig and be introspective and go to a dark place. So I was trying not to be glib, and it was expressed as a sigh.
Why a dark place?
I don't know. I think it was because...
Couldn't it have changed you in a fun way? A nice way?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. That's a great question. For some reason, I think I wanted to talk about... Because I don't. I think happy things maybe don't change you as much. Or certainly don't leave as much of an imprint.
Right, okay. They sort of glide off you.
That's a shame.
The brain is like Teflon for positivity... and Velcro for negativity.
I disagree.
Why?
Because I think happy things are fantastic.
Obviously they're fantastic, but do they... you remember them, you reckon?
Yeah, and you want to get back there, don't you? You want to keep having that hit of happiness, don't you?
Like the Nexus.
Yeah, it's what you aspire to, isn't it? Feelings of great happiness, I do. I remember those moments very, very clearly, yes. And I tend to bury the pain.
Do you?
I think I'm slightly the opposite. I'm not proud of it. But I...
Make a noise. It's time for a noise.
See if I've got a noise on the sampler.
Just to brighten the mood.
Here we go, look. I've got this one. I got two. You did two. Sexy frog noises.
You should deploy those noises more frequently in your television work.
I think I will, now that I know that I can do them.
I never heard you make those noises
before.
Me
neither. I was very over-tweaked. Like, I had this feeling of... I think I was quite nervous, and I think I thought that I was just aware of that I had a sense of occasion. I began talking in a way that I don't normally talk, quite enunciated.
But can I let you off the hook? Because do you do a lot of radio?
Not that much.
So obviously you're talking to two radio pros. And it's a very revealing medium for the voice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Stomach noises
can
be very, very difficult. Also, when you start listening to yourself, it can be very, very difficult. You can get panicky in terms of forgetting how to breathe and stuff like that. It's quite a little psychological minefield, especially the atmosphere of a studio, one of those weird...
At least you don't have clicky mouth. None of, I don't think any of us ever had clicky mouth.
You're supposed to not eat chocolate, aren't you, before you go on the radio?
Or get stoned. Claggy.
Oh, dry mouth, cotton mouth.
Yeah, sometimes people... Well, that's another thing. I think people, if they've had a bit of a jazz cigarette, they can get quite clicky mouths.
What do you think your best radio voice is? Like your best mic technique?
Do you mean to sort of go quite close? I don't really know if I know what you mean.
Well, you did
what
the sighing. Listen. All the sighs that you did on.
Oh, jeez.
Do you remember, Joe, when we were on XFM, some guy sent in a mini disc, and I think he did it in a spirit of enthusiastic affection, but he had cut together over a few weeks every time either one of us said, or, you know, any kind of little bit of hesitation or fluffery.
I did a song of all our ums and ahs.
You did an ums and ahs song.
That was after the guy had
said that. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
But this guy, and the thing went on for about 10 minutes. And we'd only been on XFM about 4 or 5 weeks or something. We get this mini disc of us just going, every nervous bit of.
That's good. That's just vocalization. That's adoration.
I think he.
Or not.
I don't think he was trying to be mean, but it completely destroyed my confidence.
Did it?
Yeah.
For how long?
Not difficult.
Quite a while. I just couldn't stop thinking about it. I got very self-conscious.
Hey,
did you say, Joe Cornish?
I said not difficult to destroy your to destroy your confidence. Just a random person with a tweet we've established can do it. Hey,
I didn't know you were so robust.
The thing I'm getting at is that, you know, I think I've told this story before, but if you work for the BBC, you get voice training. I had a little voice training session before I was a presenter on Back Row, the Radio 4 film review program. And it lasted about half an hour with this lovely lady. And she said, "Do you have a pet?" I said, "Yes, I have a cat." She took a piece of A4 paper and tore the corners off and stuck them to the microphone like little cat's ears and said, "Talk to this mic like you talk to your cat."
That's sick.
I was offended. I was really offended.
I mean, I'm offended.
And then she said, "Okay, the other thing to do is imagine you're in bed. And you're talking, having a nap. You're in bed and you're talking to your partner whose head is on the pillow next to you. And that's why everything on Radio 4 is extremely
sexy.
Yes. And slightly sexy.
Right.
And that's why it's sort of weirdly compelling and addictive because no other radio station does it.
Lauren Laverne was doing
it.
It sort of caresses
that's you.
Almost,
and you have to lean into it.
ASMR.
Yes.
But you did it automatically then.
Well,
when I asked you what your best... you which shows you're unnatural. You went straight close to the mic, straight quiet.
Yeah. It's quite creepy, Joel Roberto. Hello, coming up.
What did you say?
Joel Roberto. He sings a bit like that. Ba-da-da-do-da-do-do-do. I find it a bit intimate, and I was trying to match Lauren Laverne's tone, and then you find you're sort of in a slightly unnatural... You're not completely playing your natural game.
All right, here's
which may be the idea.
Here's, but I wonder. I've never been aware of people on that show sighing so expressively.
So I sighed the most of anyone who's ever been.
Have you ever listened to it ever
on
before?
Desert Island?
Yeah, man,
Discs.
I listened to it.
Do
a lot.
You?
Yeah.
Do you? Okay.
So maybe I overshot. Anyway, sorry. Go on.
All right, here we go. Montage of sighs. That would be a good name for a band, don't you think?
Mm. More. I think it's more a romantic novel.
Right. Here we go.
Ah.
Well,
are those all different ones?
Yeah, man.
That's extraordinary.
All from one program.
I sound like I'm having an attack.
Or smoking a massive doob.
Or having a relaxing wank. Do people say that word anymore? We covered similar territory on our radio show with the Archers.
Right, yes, you did a whole...
I cut out all the sighs and non-verbal guttural noises from an episode of the Archers.
Yeah.
Because when you're a radio actor, it's very important. That's one of the arrows in your quiver, mm-hmm. is to be able to express movement and dissatisfaction...
With
and
grunting.
...bits of emotion.
Yeah.
With grunting. They're always coming into rooms and grunting and sighing. Exactly, you're very, very good at it.
Emotional grunting.
Another famous film star who, of course, relies on grunting is...
Money Penny!
Is Pierce Brosnan.
Right.
Yeah. Who's a classic grunter. I think when anybody goes on radio, it's a close mic environment.
It's a bit like... Have you ever seen a Shakespeare production where they're trying to make it more naturalistic, but they have to use the actual words of Shakespeare, but they'd quite like to add some other words, but they can't, so they try and do it with noises. So they go like, oh, methinks that thou doth protest too much. Oh,
What sort I of haven't chosen have a very good seeing?
Example.
Modern
I haven't
noises.
Chosen a very good example.
I'm obsessed.
But they interject modern noises.
Yeah. Yes. That's a modern noise. Well, I keep on going on about this, but the most modern noise I can think of, which is a very podcast noise, particularly from NPR-style presenters, is when someone is saying something and the presenter wants to express surprise... and interest, and the noise they use is, huh,
huh. In conversation with someone, it wouldn't be in a monologue.
That's a useful noise. It's an affirmation, but it also has a hint of challenge.
Yeah, that seems quite natural to me.
I hear what you're saying, but I want to hear more.
But I haven't heard that. I only started hearing that noise a few years ago.
I see.
And I know that I only started doing it because I do it myself now, and I never used to do it.
It sounds to me a little bit dismissive. It's sort of who'da thunk it.
Yeah, exactly. It's the who'da thunk it noise, but with an intellectual sheen. It's usually about, you know, someone gives you a illegal immigrant stat.
Really? To me, it's like, I'm interested, but not that interested. I'll give you a noise and then we'll talk about something else.
I can't be bothered to actually respond to that with words. Is that the noise?
Yeah.
No. Speaking of noises, did both of you see A Star Is Born?
Yes.
With Lady Gaga.
Zsa Zsa Gabor.
How did you enjoy that?
By sitting and watching it. I liked it.
I
liked
enjoyed
the beginning
it.
Of it.
I liked the first half.
Right.
Yeah.
First half.
Bongo. I'm pointing at Joe. Yeah.
And
I'm
especially
bongo.
The beginning. That Night of Madness was very good.
Yeah, man. That first 25 minutes, whatever it is.
I don't get why he killed himself. Is that a spoiler alert?
Are you
supposed to do the spoiler alert before
I'll
or
do the
after?
Spoiler in the intro.
He done a whoopsie at the Grammys.
What? He turns up, her new manager's there.
He didn't do a whoopsie.
He just stumbled around on stage.
I mean whoopsie.
He turned up.
He did not just stumble around on stage. He did a whoopsie.
He did a public wee wee, but he didn't.
And there's no coming back from that.
Her evil English manager is there when he arrives. And the evil English manager says, you're holding her back. She's not interested in you.
He goes very hard
too
on him.
Big I mean, for it's... you. And then he's like, oh, maybe he's right. I think I'll kill myself.
Well,
it's not. There's more to it.
They're following
than that.
There's
daddy issues, you know, with Hoojima Flip O'Rourke.
Hoojima Flip has
who
got a lot
plays
to answer.
The dad. Crusty O'Donnell. Mm-hmm. Who's the elderly actor that plays the dad? Chris Christopherson,
he's
no.
Not the dad. He's his brother.
The brother.
That's the older brother.
Sam Elliott. Well, I wanted to do some Sam Elliott impressions.
But they argue about the dad, don't they? They argue about their childhood and who was the favourite and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's daddy issues going on. There's alcoholism.
There's clearly that pills. Yes. There's an addiction pills, to some sort chills. Of pills.
He's struggling with a lot of stuff.
But the English manager tips him over the edge. He tips Did you not him think over. He was good in that role? I thought he was excellent.
I thought he was very good. But that's the story of A Star Is Born. That's the third remake, I believe. Mm. So they can't just completely reinvent the narrative to that degree.
In one of them, maybe the first one.
There's a black and white one.
The incident of embarrassment
the Technicolor one.
At the award
the
show
one.
Changes. In one of them, it's the older star slapping the younger star in public, isn't it? In this one, he disgraces himself by being drunk at the Grammys.
And doing a wee-wee.
Does he do a wee-wee?
Yeah.
Yes, he does a wee-wee.
In what
struggles to play the guitar.
The film reaches its peak in the wee-wee scene and struggles to get it back. I think.
Oh, it's peaked way before then, I think.
Do you think?
So if that's the embarrassing thing in the 2018 version, what will the embarrassing thing be in the 2040 version?
Oh, good question. Good question.
It'll be shit by then, surely.
The thing is, the embarrassing thing...
It's diminishing in seriousness, isn't it? So it'll be something quite minor, like he wears the wrong colour shoes.
But it's a peculiar thing... In the modern version, isn't it? It's a peculiar thing to write, like to choose, like pissing yourself in public. Isn't it? It's an odd thing to go for.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever pissed himself?
I would have said that's not enough. That's not quite what
it's kind of good because it's so sort of random and weird and gross.
Who pissed themselves in real life? Didn't someone piss themselves at Glastonbury? Marky Smith, maybe?
No, did he?
I think he might have done.
It's undignified, that's for sure.
Do you think anyone's done a shit, shat themselves on stage?
Well, Gary Lineker shat himself in the World Cup, didn't he? And that's why he had in 20, what was the big one, Italia?
That happens a lot, though. Professional footballers shit themselves left, right, and centre.
I think athletes do it.
They do it.
It's a way of getting more speed.
That's why they all have to have a big bath at the end. Just to wash the tods off.
It actually, they can run faster, can't they? It's like throwing.
Yeah, that when they slide
stuff
into
out
the
of
goal,
a balloon.
That's because often one of the other teammates has readied the ground with some bum slots.
So in football, it happens a lot.
One of the fuck boys has gone in ahead of time with some lubricant, some trouser lubricant.
There's a dedicated position in the modern game. It's become increasingly a feature in the modern game.
Feces.
You're so naive.
But listen, do you fancy having a go at talking like Sam Elliott? Because that was a good character.
He listens to it beforehand. You know how he does this.
He's prepared this.
So I haven't
he's
prepared
to it.
He's
and then we arrive like stooges.
No, I've made
to me.
All I've done is do the clips.
Plus you're like a really good impressionist.
Yeah.
Well, it's for those of you who haven't seen it, I'm going to play a few clips.
I think we've been on the other side before. More than once.
This is the brother of the Bradley Cooper character.
The much older brother, yeah.
Older brother.
Who's speaking through a moustache.
Speaking through a moustache. And also just had this kind of accent where you can't really understand what he's saying.
It's like it's just how
he's got, I mean, he's got a brilliant voice.
All deep kind of gravelly accent, but he doesn't well moderately. You can't talk Kelly on point.
Fucking shed a tear for that piece of shit you idolized for no goddamn fucking reason.
He could speak more clearly when he's angry.
When he's angry, you gotta kind of mumble your fucking. You just say fucking goddamn fucking.
Can you understand a word of
that? The kind of acting I like, though, because he actually is. That's how people talk, isn't it? You can't understand what they say half
sometimes.
The time.
Sometimes
that's,
they talk, but it's also
kind of
an actor thing, isn't it? This is what actors do to compete. They out-quiet each other.
And make it, yeah.
They go quieter and quieter.
Less intelligible.
Yeah. Well, so that they're trying less hard than the
Didn't
other
Marlon
actor.
Brando kind of invent that?
Mumble. He's the first of the mumbles, so, right?
Well, he had cotton wool in his cheeky cheeks, didn't
Did he?
Yeah,
not all the time, but... He was the first of the mumbles.
And now you've got mumble rapping. Do you like the mumble rap?
Mumblecore.
Mumble rap like who?
Mumblecore is movies, though, right?
Yeah, mumblecore is
right.
Movies.
Movie
well,
movement.
50 Cent was always quite good because he didn't really open his mouth that wide.
Greta Gerwig was part of the mumblecore film movement. 50 Cent was the first of the mumblers, was he, in rap?
Well, I don't know if you call it mumbling, but not opening his mouth very wide seemed to be his thing.
Uh-huh. How about A$AP Rocky? Is he a mumbler?
Couldn't tell
I don't
you.
Know. That some of them are quite sort of gibberishy.
Oh, I know who's a mumbler. Playboy Carti.
Oh, Playboy Carti.
He's always mumbling.
Never heard of him.
Have you not?
No.
He's big.
Is he related to Todd Carti?
Yes. Playboy Carti's Todd Carti's son.
That would make more sense. Todd Carti, famous for playing Tucker Jenkins.
Tucker Jenkins.
In Grange Hill.
Thanks, Lou. Okay, one more bit of Sam Elliott.
Tell you one thing, though. You never brought a girl on stage before.
That was more comprehensible.
He was talking to someone he didn't know that well, so he had to enunciate.
Oh, no, yeah,
maybe this is the key to... Because you know I think you're a very good actor.
No, I don't know that. No, because I do think so you're far a very good you've actor. Not exploited the fullest yeah,
but
of my acting
skills.
Because
I don't think you've found your voice.
But you've got
to... started with a compliment and then it went... Well, because it boomeranged on you and it wasn't
But this is
a
what
compliment.
I'm building up to.
Right.
Is that Sam Elliott's found his voice.
Yes.
Right, that's a voice.
Yeah, that's a voice.
That's a roar.
So, once you, fucking do that, I'll say,
I mean, what else do you want to do with that voice apart from act? You can't work in retail.
No. You can't work at a drive-through McDonald's.
What do you think is the closest you've got to finding your voice?
In acting?
Yeah. Like, what is your voice? It's a lot of pressure, isn't it, to think
It is a lot of pressure. Well, you've got to give him some lines. An actor just... That's what happens to an actor if you ask them to speak without a script. They just freeze.
Like, what's my best...
Who am I?
Say in your voice, I tell you one thing, he's never brought a girl out on stage before.
Tell you one thing, he's never brought a girl out on stage before.
I don't think that's it. Do you think that's how Sam Elliott...
humiliated all over again.
Do you think that's how Sam Elliott speaks normally. Just in his day-to-day
yes,
life?
Yes, exactly.
It was too clear, wasn't it,
Do
what
you
he
think
said?
So?
Phone him up.
Mumble in your own way.
I'd like to speak to Sam Elliott, please. Hello, yes, Sam Elliott here. What are you thinking for this one? Well, I was thinking the kind of mumbly Sam Elliott. Oh, yes, well... I mean, I can definitely do that for
okay,
you.
Listen,
is there anything else you'd
let's,
like?
Lou and I can work as directors, okay. And let's get you to Sam Elliott. So what's your first reading of the line?
I'll tell you one thing. He's never brought a girl in. Oh,
say it again. Just say the words. Just say the words. No inflection.
It's been a long time since I've done an audition.
Action.
I'll tell you one thing. He's never brought a girl out on stage before.
He did a little head nod and a little eye. A little eye glance. After I'll tell you one thing. Okay, so this next one. Okay. We're going to tag team.
So that's straight. Now, where do you want me to go?
Okay, I'm going to give you the first direction. Drop the look. Just relax the face. Mm-hmm. And just don't move your teeth at all. In fact, keep your teeth clenched together.
Okay. And close your eyes.
Okay.
Seriously?
Ready? Don't think about it. Action.
I tell you one thing. He's never brought a...
I was helping.
It is better already. It's better already.
Is it?
Yeah.
Closing my eyes.
Do it again.
I'll tell you one thing. He's never brought a girl out on stage before.
I liked that. Did you?
Throw something in.
Say it as though you're in a lot of pain.
I'll tell you one thing. He's never brought a girl out on stage before.
I think the teeth thing is a misdirection. Relax
it's getting
the teeth.
Bronhorn.
Relax the teeth.
Close your
teeth.
Eyes, but don't open. Yeah. But
do everything you just did. Relax
the
teeth.
Do I have to keep my eyes closed?
Do it in
still?
An American
don't
accent.
Try without you.
In an American
okay.
Accent. So you got pain, eyes closed.
Pain. Oh, eyes closed.
Yeah, American accent.
Pain, eyes closed, relax the teeth, American accent. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you one thing. He's never brought a girl out on stage before.
See, that's good already, isn't it? That is actually
that was
good.
Actually good.
That could be out of a Robert Altman
that
film.
That could be. So your natural voice might be American.
Because it's far away. Like the further away you get from me is the better.
Mm.
Isn't it?
Amen.
Amen. What's been my best role? What have I been best in? I tell you the thing I always think of whenever I think of acting. Like, I don't do acting anymore, really. It's a shame. But maybe I will when I grow into my looks a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll be back. It'll be like Farnsworth doing The Straight Story, getting nominated for an Oscar.
But you were saying your best role.
Best
is there
role.
Something you look at that of your oeuvre?
The thing I always think of, the compliment that meant most to me at the time was when we were doing the Adam and Joe show and we did the 1980s house. Mm. And I played the matriarch of the Fatboy Slim family.
That's right.
Who were all web designers.
I rewatched that recently.
And I remember Jane Goldman saying...
Why?
Yeah, why did you watch that?
Your kid, it's a long story. It was for an, I was doing some research into the 80s for
a
right. project.
Yeah, that's a good thing to
yeah,
to
that's
look
a
at.
Good thing to look at.
It was funny, though. I'm trying to remember some
it's very
funny
jokes. It's very funny. You're good. You play a very gregarious woman.
Yeah.
Who owes a little bit to your mother, I
right,
think.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, but it's very, very funny.
You're freaking out with the soda stream, I think. There's a kitchen nightmare
Well,
moment.
You're looking through the Face magazine,
mm-hmm.
and you're looking at Boy George, and you say something funny I can't remember.
I remember the thing about...
This isn't a good look, though, to be fawning over one's own work.
Well, it's okay. It's the 100th podcast. This is all about me.
Okay. But it's, you think that's your number one performance, your best.
Which
your
was
best
the bit that Jane Goldman liked?
She said that. She just said your acting was really good. And I'd no one had ever paid me a compliment on my acting before. I thought, wow, I'm acting. I'm an actor.
But it's big, you see. You've got to find the right vehicle for that sort of performance.
That's bigness. Well, I'm hoping bigness comes back
Jim
again.
Jim Carrey. You need to possess the whole movie.
I am Jim Carrey.
Or Atkinson. Rowan Atkinson, you need a whole. He needs a whole film movie built around him. And Louis, true, that's your job.
I'll see what I can do. You had a series more or less built around you, though, didn't you?
The Persuasionists.
Was that built around you? And Last Chances?
Oh, yeah, maybe. Well, I sort of wrote that with Tony McMurray.
Wasn't big enough, though. Wasn't big and silly enough. Yeah, it wasn't.
No,
big
I tell you why not. Because the pilot for that show, which was about a band in Brighton, a guy who's part of a band and they're slightly loserish. And the pilot for that was directed by Stephen Merchant, who was a friend of the co-writer, Tony McMurray. And they were, I remember when we did the pilot, they were filming the second series of The Office. So they were right at the vanguard. They were enjoying the success of the first series that was just taking off. And that was the beginning of a return to a very naturalistic style of comedy after everything had been quite big for a while, I think, and grotesque, you know what I mean? So I'm waiting for it to swing back.
So you were directed to play
I was directed under. To turn it down. That's always the direction I get. Down a bit. No further.
I turn it up. You got to find something where you could turn Buckley's up to the max.
Yeah.
Wigs, high heels, flowery dresses. Screeching.
That's the other thing, is that I used to like dressing as a woman whenever I got the opportunity. And now I don't know where you're at with that kind of thing. Probably it's not okay. I don't know. There's got to be a good reason for it. And there was seldom a good reason with me.
There was a good gag in the 80s house with the kid eating some ready breck and him saying, "Mom, what's happened to me? I'm glowing." He played it very well, didn't he, that kid?
Yeah, he went on to be in a lot of stuff, that kid.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And what was your line? Was, "It's okay, look, it's central heating for kids."
Yeah, wow, you really did see it recently. I don't remember anything.
"He's like a beautiful bird."
Is that Boy George?
That's what you say about Boy George.
"Oh, yeah. Look, he's like a beautiful bird."
So ebullient.
That was
it's sort of very moving because she's so ebullient, but you know she's so fragile.
She did.
Like mums so often are.
She used to ricochet from extreme enthusiasm and joy to tears.
It's all ruined. I can't remember what
it's so beautiful.
It's all ruined.
She's so excited by the house.
What
and
were you
then
freaking out about that was ruined? I can't remember. I think it was you trying to do something
then
with the soda stream.
When the daughter gets hooked on smack. Because she's seen the anti-smack advert in the face.
That's
and
right,
mum's very supportive,
yeah,
isn't she? She that's says, right. Where did you find that? It's in the playground.
She said, "Yes, I've got you the dirty needles."
<That's right. laughs> Oh, this is terrible.
We're laughing at our own stuff.
Terrible.
"I just bumped into you at the supermarket. I was backing out of a parking space and I hit your car. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. But you're angry now, very angry now, and that's making me very angry too. No, fuck you and your mother too."
So how do you feel about looking at some report cards?
He's got, I'm worried about this. He's actually got some order cards. That's what we used to call them, wasn't it? Westminster
report cards.
Report cards, yeah.
Smell the report cards. I found a stack of them the other day.
You kept a lot of them, didn't you?
My dad did. I found them in his belongings.
Oh, really? That's nice that you kept those.
I've got them all. I brought down the wrong thing.
You kept yours as well?
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, let's split them up. We'll divvy them between me and Louis.
All right.
Because I don't think you should be reading your own. You shouldn't be self-editing. What would you say your... Oh.
83.
Can I say, before any reading of the report cards, how did you feel about reports I remember clearly feeling sick to my stomach when they arrived, and when I saw the envelope flop through the letterbox and I knew that it was that term's report, it used to sort of ruin the beginning of a holiday because I was so terrified, so mortified by the idea of the judgments that were coming my way and my parents being disappointed by them.
I didn't mind getting reports because I think I usually did all right.
Right, okay.
The thing is, they came at the beginning of the halls.
Yeah.
So there was a general feeling of, ah, fuck it. Wasn't there? Whoa. It was like, oh, you know, so you might get a little bit ticked off, but then it was, way,
go and have in this fun. One, you came last in the class.
What, is that true?
In French and physics with mathematics. 22nd place out of 22.
Shut up.
34% you got on the physics exam.
Whoa. What year was that?
83.
Not that I improved in physics. That was my first year.
I would have thought you'd be all right at the French. Let's see what the French teacher had to say about it.
Physics.
Although his position has gone down, he has had a reasonable term and he has worked quite well. However, there are many weaknesses and he cannot afford to relax his efforts.
Mad.
Oh, mate.
I don't know. When I read these as an adult, I can see the housemaster and the teachers knowing the parents will read it.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of performance in there, probably, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like making it seem as if they are absolutely on top of your every foible and strength and weakness, really demonstrating value for money.
Well, there must be a lot of techniques to write parent. Reports because
imagine
they've got
how
so many
they've
to
got
write.
To do.
Exactly.
And they've how got to make them got... each one ding yeah. dong.
We've got a big old yeah. stack. The parents need to feel that their children are getting proper care and attention, individual care.
Plus, this is an expensive school. And apart from you, the child, this is all the parents getting, really. Mm. This is the only evidence of what they've spent their money on.
Apart from the keys to
this is an odd one.
World.
So in physics, he has his ups and downs, but his heart is in the right place and he wants to understand what is going on. But I do wish he would get some shirts that fitted, as otherwise he is quite smart.
Yeah, but you had a funny
I know
fashion
exactly
thing
who
going
that's
on.
From.
Is that Hepburn Scott?
Yeah. Is it? Your shirts were too tight.
Were they?
Yeah, because you did your top button up. You were all like Mr. Boa Constrictor.
No, I had big shirts. I've never been a tight shirt
But you were a
guy.
Button up guy. You were not a hairy chest exposed man.
No.
Not that you had a hairy
but
chest.
But I had shirts untucked. Don't you remember? They were almost
I think,
like,
yes, I think you used to have right, stylishly. Yeah.
Caftan-y.
You had a look, didn't you? It was like an Afghan sort of Northern Alliance tribesman thing with his sort of shirt tails right out, like a little skirt. Mm. And it would hang about and you'd do a little dance. You had a little dance that you used to do and you had bells on your fingers. Do you remember, Joe?
What, like a dancing boy?
Yeah,
like a
dancing
boy.
Boy, a bunch of Barsi. And they say, look at Buckles. Yeah, he's sticking around. And we used to skip and he used to dance with his bells and his skirts
dressed
would,
as a little
would
lady.
Twirl around. Yeah, do you remember that?
What was the worst report you ever got? Was there a phrase that sticks in your head from those days,
yes,
Joe?
Yes, I got some bad ones. Go on, Joe.
So I went through a really stupid phase at school where I just didn't give a shit.
Mm-hmm. I think I remember that.
I don't. What was the other phase?
It was particularly, we started studying Charlemagne.
Oh, yeah.
And my God, it was the most boring thing I'd ever, I mean, it just felt like dying. You know, when you're young...
You were fine with the other French kings.
And you're... Well, no, any French king. But when you're young and you're full of sap and energy
spunk.
And excitement and
yeah.
spunk, you're absolutely brimming over with spunk. And you're told to study some medieval French king. Ugh. It was terrible.
Yeah.
But I swung through on my art and in creative language, like story writing.
Mm.
So that kept me afloat. Anything involving the learning of facts, I was not good at all. Or any abstract concept, I really couldn't grasp. Making stuff up and telling stories and stuff, very, very good, very strong.
They made, not special allowances, but I remember in A-level, because you started out doing history, and then at a certain point they said, do you know what, fine.
Yeah, it's a waste of time.
You don't need to do history
so
anymore.
I did history of art, and
they let you do art as your third A-level.
My A-level.
That's
yeah.
right. You
Which
got
was slightly that. Jammy.
It was well
it was
jammy.
Very jammy.
What would they? What had you done to?
Just because I was flatlining, there was nothing else that wouldn't have been just a complete waste of
really?
Time. Yeah.
Were you getting reports that said your son is a
moron,
a cheeky, disruptive?
But that there was a short period when I was a cheeky, disruptive one.
Yeah,
it was only a term, though. I think
I had a shock when my mum brought some round, and I'd thought that I just sort of always did pretty well in my report cards. And my mum brought one round and said, "Oh, I think you'll like this. It's quite funny." And there was one or two of the maths A level ones just said, "He's wasting my time, he's wasting his own time, he's disrespectful, he's cheeky." It was actually quite upsetting to read it.
Wow. Mm.
We all did quite, like, there was a class where there was a teacher who said, "Right, if you don't stop," it's Julian Thorles.
Now look,
chum. If you don't stop messing, I'm going to go out of this classroom, I'm going to stand outside the door, and I'm going to wait till someone comes out and apologises, and the lesson will not continue until that happens.
Did he say that?
The lesson did not continue.
Obviously, what's he thinking?
He just waited outside for 35 minutes.
I mean, that's teaching 101. That's not quite a useful strategy for a teacher.
Maybe I'm exaggerating at 35 minutes.
Now look, he was the one that told me, if you don't buck up your ideas, you're going to end up like Mike Adler. He left school last year, and in the holidays, do you know where I saw him? He was working at a petrol station.
That something similar happened to me when I was working in Tower Records in Piccadilly.
Yeah.
And one of our old school teachers came and bought some video cassettes, it probably would have been, or some records. And he was in the queue, and then he came to be served by me, and he looked at me and gasped and said, "Joe Cornish, how the mighty have fallen."
He used that phrase.
Yeah.
The weird part is the mighty.
Well, because I was, because I made films, I directed plays. I was a bit of a sort of, what's the character in Rushmore called? Yeah. Max thingy.
Twatface.
Max Twatface. I was a bit of a Max Twatface.
Yeah. Is he not called Rushmore?
No.
Why is it called Rushmore?
Because that's the name of the school, oh, maybe. Right.
And what did you say in return? I was going to give you a discount on that fucking Wham record, but now I'm not, so shit off.
Yeah.
Sir.
I just felt very depressed.
Did it upset you?
Yeah, I just felt, fuck, maybe he's right.
Oh, that's just bullshit.
Isn't it strange like how little phrases that people say, maybe he didn't even think about it and never gave it another
He must have been joking.
And then afterwards, you, for the rest of your life, maybe you might remember joking. That.
But I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe he was being quite ironic. Like, how the mighty have fallen.
On their feet, working in one of Britain's top video stores. Give me a discount. Now you're in this position of power.
The holiday horn, it goes to
have 2 carats. Go to the toilet, take your time. Holiday time.
So it was my birthday recently, and one of the presents I got from our friend Danny was Spying Through a Keyhole, a box set of David Bowie demos that he made in 1969 that were released earlier this year in April. So these have never been heard before, some of these songs. And they include titles like Mother Grey, Love All Round, Goodbye 3D Joe, and Angel Angel Grubby Face.
Good Angel titles. Angel Grubby Face.
And so I haven't heard these. I haven't listened to them yet.
Really?
Yeah. So I thought we could have a go at imagining. Which one shall we imagine?
Well, it's got to be Angel Angel Grubby
it's
Face.
It's
got to
be Angel
it?
Angel Grubby Face.
Well, I've written one.
Have you?
It's called Goodbye 3D Joe. But you were wanting to do Angel Angel Grubby Face.
Well, we can do both.
Angel, angel, grubby face.
That's very strident. He was much more fey.
Oh, was it?
This is 1969. He hasn't been...
You see, I might have got that wrong as well.
But this was him trying out mid-70s. That's why he didn't release it, because the world wasn't ready yet.
Angel, angel, grubby face. The way you eat is such a... Is a
disgrace.
You've got chocolate all over the place. Angel, angel, grubby
angel,
face.
Angel, angel, grubby face. You were such a big disgrace.
It's something like that, isn't
all
it?
Over the human race.
Oh, angel,
it's not as easy as you might think
angel,
it would be.
Angel, grubby, angel, grubby face. Fluttering there in God's good grace.
Ooh.
Oh, nice.
Mucky, mucky marks upon your baby face.
is totally wrong. Clean totally your face, wrong. You silly angel. You can't come into God's presence looking
wash
like that.
Wash your hands, old grumpy face, sitting on the steps of my guitar, like a Japanese lady.
This reminds me of, do you remember doing the David Bowie convention?
Was it? Yes.
In 1988. I found a recording
oh,
of that.
Oh, God, no.
Do you want to hear a little bit? You don't have to.
Go on, then.
Are you ready? Are you ready to go? Yeah, are you standing on the edge of your seat?
I'm ready as I'll ever.
Hello, welcome to the International David Bowie Convention. I'm your host, David Bowie. On my right is David Bowie. Hello, David.
Hello.
David's got a bit of a cold. And on my left, may I introduce a pop star of an album such as Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars and Pin-Ups. Is he with us? David.
Yes.
Wait a minute. The eldest one had glass legs, Bowie. Hello, David.
Hello.
Well, David.
Yes.
No,
yes.
I'm not talking to you.
Yes, you are.
David.
Yes.
I'm talking to you.
Yes.
David.
Hello.
This is
David Bowie tuning a radio.
This is David. That's it.
This is David Bowie clipping his toenails.
This is David Bowie putting his shoes on.
This is David Bowie going through a door.
This is David Bowie doing his homework.
1988, that was. We were on holiday in New York. We were staying at a friend's house, Chad. We were 19. Well, I was 19. How old were you, Lou?
88. I would have been just turned 18.
I was 14.
And we were staying at our friend Chad's house.
You
were 19.
Recording.
Chad was away, I think, and we were sat around, a bit steamed. And we got into doing David Bowie voices.
I do think over the years our impressions have improved.
Well, they're a little
they
more
a little
nuanced
bit forced.
Now, yes.
A little bit forced.
Where did the wuzzer come from? I think it was because
when he says the word was.
It was, yes.
Was there a specific interview that it was based on?
I was feeling very,
very blue.
Well,
there's that one where he says theatricality that we liked a lot.
Yeah.
Is that on the special extras of the film Labyrinth? I think it might be.
Theatricality is a word.
Yes, but not the way David says it.
And he also said superlative.
He also said superlative, which is not a word.
And he says, you're no... What is it?
You're no spring chicken son.
You're no chicken right. son.
Isn't that in the Labyrinth extras, or a making of Labyrinth?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you definitely. There's a lot of theatricality flying around in the Labyrinth extras.
But I do think our impressions have got a little bit better.
Thank you.
They were a little bit overexcited and forced back in the 80s.
They were heavily reliant on just the word wuzz and wuzzer.
I think we were very, very stoned.
Yeah.
It was very powerful marijuana.
I wasn't, though.
You were very drunk on beer.
On beer.
I was. Me and Louis were very, very high on marijuana that
we acquired
in Central Park.
Central Park.
Central Park. Yes.
It was very exciting for us because America was a very exciting time, wasn't it?
Yes.
But this is all throat clearing before.
This is all throat clearing before. So we've had a go at Angel Grubby Face. What does it actually sound like? This is the first time I've heard it. Let's see if we're anywhere close.
Sunshine shadows soften her hair. Our fingertips touch. She wants to feel older. We're citizens of town, lying in a country field, gazing down upon her face. Suddenly we're lovers. Your briefcase prince is by your side to kiss away the dew.
It's good, isn't it?
Nice.
I mean, that's why
lovely.
We're not
very different from the Bowie that I was doing.
Yeah, and me. It was
very,
nothing
was
to do
remarkably
with
similar.
Chocolate.
Yours is quite close.
Remarkably
now
similar.
We should play Joe's one.
Here we go.
Hello. Yes, I'm ready now. I'm ready to sing. I'll just have a quick line of cocaine. A cheeky bump up this mouth.
Okay, you didn't have cocaine in those days.
It's not true.
Good chorus.
Very good.
Quite strong.
Oh,
nice.
Glyph glasses back in the day, didn't require a special display. You could make red and blue lenses from colored sweet wrappers and assemble the frames from a box of cream crackers. Then all the dimensions would spring into life. Dennis Quaid fighting sharks, Jason's big bloody knife. Your eyes might feel funny, you might start to feel ill. New dimensions of terror in Amityville. So goodbye, 3D Joe.
Wow.
The world is much flatter since you had to go. They said you were just a gimmick, but don't listen to them, they're curmudgeonly cynics. And goodbye, 3D Joe. The world lacks dimension since you had to go, but you left the door ajar, and now they're releasing 20 more avatars. Then imagine my thrill, I almost wet my knickers when they announced a new movie from Robert Zemeckis that used a technique they called active shutter that could lift 3D films out of the shitty old gutter. The men put on bow ties, the girls their best dress to attend the premiere of the Polar Express. And they gasped and they marveled and offered their thanks for the gift to the world of a 3D Tom Hanks. The glasses were plastic, the lenses liquid crystal. The IMAX is sold out from Berlin to Bristol. But it soon became clear it was just a device for cinema owners to charge double the price. Goodbye, 3D Joe. The world is much flatter since you had to go. They said you were just a gimmick, but don't listen to them, they're curmudgeonly cynics. And goodbye, 3D Joe. The world lacks dimension since you had to go, but you left the door ajar, and now they're releasing 20 more avatars.
No, I don't know about that one. I think that's actually bollocks.
Wow, you pulled it out of the bag for the 100th episode. Thanks, man.
That was impressive, Jerry.
Because that's, it's like a pian, is that the word?
Pian.
To 3D film technology.
Yeah. Well, Bowie absolutely adored films.
He was a cineast.
And he loved anything that would absorb him into the theatricality of the experience. Yeah. And if he was still alive today, God bless him, he'd be very excited about the forthcoming Avatar films. He absolutely adores little pert blue bums. I loved Avatar. I just love watching little pert blue bums hopping about from tree to tree. What do they do with the tails when they plug it into the ears? What do they do? Why do they do it?
Because they're bonding with them.
They're bonding.
When they plug them into the tails of the horses. No, they're the not horses. Having sex.
Yeah,
they're just having a
they're docking. They've got they a dock link with them. Yeah.
A mental link.
Okay.
Well, it's not all about sex. Wow, that was amazing, man. Okay, do you want to hear what Goodbye 3D Joe actually sounds like?
Yes.
Clothing a patchwork cloak of sequins and diamonds, red and blue. Threateningly, Joe performed his harlequin show as dusk was due.
So that's the sort of thing you're dealing with.
Not
so
that far off, was it? I think you got off. It. The voice, you just with an octave too low.
He hasn't found his sort of chord progression yet, has he? He's working in kind of major chords. He's working in quite sort of tuneful, melodic chords.
Yeah, well, he was still coming out of his...
Minor and haunted right. Yet.
Coming out of his Anthony Newleyfangs.
He's coming out of his Anthony... I'm just coming out of... David, are you ready? Oh, I'm just coming out of my Anthony Newley phase. I'll be 2 minutes. I'm ready now.
I'll write a Bowie song for the 200th.
Wait.
This is an advert for Squarespace. Hey guys, it's Broshak with me, Paul Broshak. We got Mike here. We're going to talk about his new MMA comedy special. We're going to talk about his view counts, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Paul.
Hey, brother.
I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to talk about any of those things anymore.
You don't?
No. I want to talk about... I built a website, Paul.
All right. Stream some fights, settle some beefs, stick it to the elites, that kind of thing.
No. It's mainly dog pictures, Paul. And I did it on Squarespace. Have you heard of Squarespace? I went to squarespace.com/Buxton and I did a free trial. And I tried some of the beautiful templates, Paul, and I typed things in. I dragged in pictures of the dogs. And before I knew it, I had a website, Paul. So I bought it and I've made some very sweet dog t-shirts and I sell those on the shop on the website.
Uh-huh. But do you still fight and stuff?
A little bit, but not really. Oh, and Paul, I wanted to tell you that when it comes time to buy your website or domain on Squarespace, if you use the offer code Buxton, you save 10%. Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Where'd you do that free trial?
Squarespace.com/Buxton.
And how sweet were the dogs?
Very.
Continue.
Hey, welcome back, podcats. That was a little bit of Rosie you heard growling. That was fun growling, happy growling. Sometimes she'll come into the room and get on the sofa while me and my wife are watching TV, and she'll have a tea towel or something in her jaws, and she will waggle it at us, hopefully, and then we have to grab onto the other end of the tea towel and wrench it around, and that makes her happy. So that's what you heard then. Rosie! I don't know where she's gone. I heard her racing off and yipping. Well, it is Friday night. So that was Joe Cornish and Louis Theroux chatting with me there beforehand. Very grateful to them both for making the time, not just for this episode, but for so many other episodes before, and for continuing to be so loyal and supportive whenever I ask for their help. By the way, Joe wanted me to tell you that he is now on Instagram. Previously, Cornballs has been shy or reticent or aloof, however you want to read it, when it comes to social media. But earlier this year, he decided that he was going to take a plunge and join Instagram. His name on there is Mr. Joe Cornish, all one word, MrJoeCornish. I had a look there earlier today, and he's posted quite a few pictures from various parts of his illustrious career. A few bits and pieces from old Adam and Joe days. I pop up there once or twice. And there's on-set pictures from his films, Attack the Block and The Kid Who Would Be King. Bits and pieces of him working with Edgar. A picture of him on the set of one of the Star Wars movies. Sat in a Millennium Falcon. All sorts of things. The next episode of this podcast, 101, will be the Catcher in the Rye Book Club. Myself, Richard Ayoade, and Sarah Pascoe talking about J.D. Salinger's classic novel in a pretty informal and unstructured way. But look, as it's episode 100, yeah, I'm just going to pretend that I've won some sort of award and say thank you to everyone who has helped and does help with this podcast, especially everyone who has recorded episodes with me, whether they've gone out yet or not. I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much. Thanks to Seamus Murphy Mitchell for production support and Matt Lamont for additional editing on this episode. But thanks also to Annika Meissen and Jack Bushell for their work on previous episodes. Thank you so much to Helen Green and Luke Drozd for the beautiful podcast and merchandise artwork that they've provided over the years. Thanks to Backstreet Merch, who do the podcast merchandise. There's a link in the description of this podcast, should you wish to go and visit and see what there is there. Thanks to Scroobius Pip, who helped me out very early on, giving me advice about the podcast and being generally supportive. Thanks, Scroobius. Thanks very much to everyone at Acast. I really appreciate all their hard work, finding sponsors and dealing with technical queries and all sorts of things. They're always helpful and friendly, and I'm very grateful to them. Thanks very much to Kevin and Toby at Really Quite Something Limited for designing and maintaining the Adam Buxton app. Thanks to various other friends, family, and colleagues who helped me with the podcast, Mark and Zivi, Garth, Uncle Dave, James Sterling, Clive Tullow, Dan Hawkins, Becca, Emily, and Chiggy. But I think the three people who I owe the greatest debt of gratitude to, as far as the podcast goes, are Rosie, of course. She isn't here right at this moment. She's off yipping. But, boy, I really love Rosie, and in many ways she's the reason that this podcast came together. When I used to take her out for walks back in the early days and record voice notes and then think to myself, oh, well, maybe I could do a podcast. And she's transformed my life, Rosie, in all sorts of ways. So, thank you, Rose. And, of course, Seamus, he deserves another thank you. I suspect I can be a bit of a pain in the arse to work with. And Seamus is always nice about it, as well as being very good at his job. So thanks, Seamus. And speaking of people who have to put up with me being a bit of a pain in the arse, thank you very much to my wife.
My wife?
She probably won't listen to this. If she did, she would find it cringy, I think. But I'm very lucky to know her. And she does a great deal to enable me to continue making this podcast. One final thank you to you. Yes, that's right. You listened right to the end of this. Good for you. If you keep listening, there's even a little extra final nugget of stupidity after like and subscribe. That's your reward for battling right the way through a whole episode of this nonsense. No, seriously, I appreciate it. And until next time, we share the same sonic space. Please take care. Did you know that I love you? Bye!
Also sleep with earplugs.
Yep. And I did also have earplugs.
Did you? And yeah. It was still audible through
sliced
the earplugs.
Through the earplugs.
Actually, you know, when there's been noises outside the house, when we lived in Harlesden, so on occasion there'd be kids who were a bit more roughy tufty, and you'd say, can you please stop doing what you're doing? Or you'd shout out the window, and it didn't go so well.
Were they members of the roughy tufty club?
I think a couple of them might have been. Because you know that's a prison gang.
The Roughy Tufty Club. Well, I know it's what the Tufty Club's evolved into to keep itself, like, up to speed with young
because
people.
There's the Nazi lowriders, Aryan Nations, and the Roughy Tufty Club.
Is that really true?
Some way they're like they're above the two. They're sort of the worst of the prison gangs because it's more like an organised crime gang. They merged with the Sooty Club.
Thank God you brought it round to something funny. Not just a. Yeah,
not a
with the Sooty Club.
The Sooty Club.
Sooty and Sweep.
Sooty and Sweep.
lot of it, it's weird, a lot of it comes out of children's TV for some reason.
Is that really so? Is it? And they're all a subset of the Puffin Book Club. Is that true? And you wear like blue Peter badges, like depending on who you've shanked.
Yeah, but it's also a lot of the things that started as nice things have devolved. So like it used to be help a lady.
This is in America.
They force old ladies across the road.
They force them across the road when they don't want to.
When they don't want to go.
Really?
Yeah.
Come on, you're coming out with
us. I don't care where you want
to pick up your pension. You silly bitch. It's a shame about the bad language, isn't it? Because otherwise...
Otherwise it would be... it would be really good stuff.